You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as they say. And we've got very special guests on the line for this episode 201. I'm very excited about this because the people who contacted me out of the blue and are Colombian indeed, well, more Colombian than the Colombians, because his name is Ervin Liz, and he's from Tierra Adentro. But we're not speaking to him in Tierra Adentro. We're speaking to him up in Luther, Minneapolis, Minnesota?
Luther College in Decorah, Iowa.
In Iowa. You see, I don't even know where it is. Okay, Decorah, Iowa. I've been to Iowa, and I've had someone on the show from Iowa, from Waverly. In fact, Colombian who lives in Waverly, Iowa. He was adopted from Bogota as a young child and then taken to Waverly. But I don't know anything about Luther. I don't know. I mean, Ervin, let me just say welcome on Columbia Calling, and just give us a background. How did you end up up there in Iowa? I mean, tell us a little bit about your background.
Thank you so much for having me here, Richard. I am definitely excited to be here talking with you today. So I am originally from Colombia, from the Tierra Adentro region. I am the son of a former coffee farmer, and my family is Nasa. So I am proud to say that I am from the Nasa indigenous community. I grew up in the house again. My father used to farm coffee. So, today we're going to be talking a little bit about coffee here. And so my passion about coffee, I think, was born out there in the farm. Mm-hmm. And just to go a little bit ahead, in 2010, one of my sisters told me that she had found a scholarship to go study abroad, and she told me if I wanted to apply. And, you know, I was always a kid who wanted to do something different. And when I was in Colombia, of course, I did not have all the luxuries, all the things that I needed, you know. Electricity actually didn't come to my house until 2002. And the road didn't reach there until, about the same time, 2002, 2003. So, you know, I didn't grow up with electricity. I did not grow up with a road. And there were many situations where the family did not have enough money because, you know, coffee, although my father used to trade it a lot, still it's not a very expensive, a product that you can sell to somebody else. And so we didn't have much, but I always had a dream to do something different. I always wanted to pursue perhaps a different path. And so anyways, in 2010, my sister tells me about this scholarship. I went ahead and applied. I got it immediately. I went to Norway. I had never been on an airplane. I had never been at an airport. I did not know any English, 0% English. I can tell you 0%. And I can tell you this because when I was in Norway, a person asked me, "Ervin, how are you?" And then I replied, "I am from Colombia." And now, I did not remember this story, but she told me when we graduated, she told me, "Ervin, do you remember when I asked you, how are you, and you told me you were from Colombia?" And I was like, "No, I don't remember that, but sure, I think I'd say that."
But you
so,
got
so that was my English level in 2010. Again, I got to Norway, did not know any English. And I was going to an all-speaking English international school, and we were doing there the international baccalaureate, which is one of the hardest high school diplomas that there is in the world. And so no English, indigenous from Colombia, no experience whatsoever, but I did it because I thought that I could do it. And, you know, in life, if you think that you can do it, if you believe it, you can definitely do it. Anyways, after I graduated from UWC Norway, I applied to here to study in the U.S. I got accepted into four different universities. And then Luther, gave me a really good package. So then I decided to come over to Luther. And, you know, everything just happens for a reason. I got here to Luther, and it just happens that John Buckland was coming over to talk at one of the entrepreneurship classes. And, you know, that's how I met with him. John Buckland, by the way, is here. I'm just getting ahead, but John Buckland is my business partner into the Colombian Coffee Connection. So just that's a little bit of my background. So yeah, that's as of now what's happened with my life.
Well, yeah, in the space of 5 minutes, you've given me a whistle-stop tour through one of the most incredible stories. So you come from a home which really has no access, no communication until a certain point, had no electricity, no running water. You got a scholarship to go to Norway. The guy from Tierra Adentro goes to Norway. Then you get a scholarship to go to Luther in Decor, Iowa. Well, you say that, you know, if you want to do it, you can do it. You have faith that you really are testament to this. It's an amazing story. And so now you're living. You finished college in the U.S., right? You finished?
That's right. Okay. I graduated this past May.
Well,
I did take a year off. Yeah. I was when I was at Luther, I was not very happy with what I was doing because I thought I could do more. I always thought I could do more, and I was maybe I can do more outside. And then I took off, and I realized maybe I need to come back so I can keep doing more. And so I came back and graduated finally this May with a BA in economics.
Very good.
So it was a really good process. I think I did pretty good for my classes. I actually did much better than the locals, I will say. I'm proud of that. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very good, interesting process.
And now you're a resident in the U.S. and you've got a business.
Well, not quite. Okay. I'm not exactly a resident right now. I am under my OPT visa. So currently, I am working with John under this business, and John is essentially the owner. Mm-hmm. I came up with the idea, and then I presented the idea to John, but John is, so I'm not really the owner of the company per se. Mm-hmm. We are working together and everything. But yeah, that's a little bit, we can dip a little bit further into that a little bit later when we get into the Colombian Coffee Connection story.
Yeah, definitely. No problem about that. But your desire then with this BA in economics that you've got is to help the communities in which you grew up in, I imagine, then down there in Tierra Adentro and INSA and these places.
That is absolutely right. So when I was about to graduate, well, first of all, I was thinking, what am I going to do for myself? And second of all, what can I do for the people who are around me, right? Because you first, in my philosophy is that you need to help yourself first so you can help other people, right? Mm-hmm. If you are completely unable, how can you help?
Mm-hmm.
So I was in that thought process. And then originally I had thought, well, in Tierra Adentro, we produce a really good coffee.
Yeah.
I can sell it in Bogota, right? And so I have so many friends in Bogota, and then I ask some people, and they say, yeah, if you have coffee, we can go ahead and buy it. And so I thought, well, then I can do it. And so at some point, it just clicked into my head, and then I thought, well, if I can do it in Bogota, why can't I do it here, right? And so I was going to do it on my own, but then, you know, I don't have enough experience. I don't have all sorts of things that, you know, that I did not have at the moment. So, you know, if you don't have something, what do? You look for them. You don't just mm-hmm. say no. You don't just quit. You need to look for the right people, for the resources, for everything that you need. And so that's how I came to talk with John. I, of course, gave him a call. I was very nervous at that moment, but, you know, I had my idea. I had put the numbers together. I did my little study. I went ahead and applied for my exporters license in Colombia. I did everything that I needed to do. And that's how it all got started. And essentially, it's again so that we can help the NASA people in Colombia, especially, to sell their coffee directly to the customers, because the coffee business is kind of business that has a lot of intermediaries. And research has shown that only 1% of the profits of all coffee trade goes back to the farmer, and everything else stays with the intermediaries. And I think what we are doing here in the Colombian Coffee Connection makes a huge difference. It actually it's creating a disruption in the system because we are giving 10% back to the community and we are paying our farmers twice what everybody else is paying. So we are definitely creating a change in there. And that's, again, helping the community and, of course, helping ourselves as well.
It's incredible. So this is the company you have, the Colombian Coffee Connection. People can look this up, ColombianCoffeeConnection.com, very easy to find. And you've got on the website stories of like some of the families that you are helping. I like that because I like that personal touch very much. How many different families do you work with then in the region?
Yes, so currently, because we just got started in April, currently we're only working with one specific family that we have actually gotten the coffee here into America. And then we are, our model is to continue developing from that particular example so that other people also see what we're doing, that they understand that this is a process where we are, as much as we are, you know, being able to pay them more, we also require that they are the best of the best, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a process that is essentially going to be developing from this first first trial, we could say. Mm-hmm. And then what we expect is, or what we want is to have our first farmer then teach the other farmers what he's doing, how he got to be working with us. And so that way everything is a lot more sustainable.
Yeah, definitely. And everything is environmentally friendly. There's no chemicals.
Yes. That's right. That's one of the value propositions, we could say. We do not accept coffees that have any kind of herbicides, any kind of pesticides, anything that could be harmful for the health of our consumers. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is very important because just like one of our farmers was saying in Colombia, you know, when we went to Colombia, and we will talk about this a little bit later. He was saying, you know, coffee is a product that humans consume. It's a product that people are drinking, right? So we cannot treat this product just like it's just anything, right? We need to take care of all the things that, and then we need to make sure that this is being processed in a hygienic manner, that there is all sorts of quality controls, so that the coffee is not thrown in the side of the road, so that there is no dogs walking around the coffee, and you know, all these things that are unsanitary and that unfortunately we have been able to see in certain places. But in the case of us, our farmers, they make sure that everything is completely 100% sanitary. Everything is done in a very clean and perfect environment, we could say, for the process of the coffee. So yeah, that's a little bit about that.
No, it's important. And I would just repeat that as well. In the second segment of the show, in addition to Irvin, we'll have John and Tara Backlund on the show talking a bit about their travels and their journey down to Colombia with Irvin to see, I guess, the coffee plantations, where it comes from, to meet the people. Winding back a little bit and talking about the people and so on, I really want to explore something here, Irvin. How is it? I mean, when your family said, when you said, I'm going to Norway, I've got a scholarship, what did your family say?
So my family have always been very supportive of all of my siblings. I mean, my family, we're five siblings, actually. Okay. And four of us have been able to study abroad on a scholarship. So my first sister, the first one who went out, she did a community college program in Portland, in Oregon. And then after her, one of my sisters, my eldest sister, started working at the Organization of the American States in Washington, D.C. So she was there for a year. And then one of my other brother, he was selected because he was the best chemistry student in the entire Popayan, the Cauca University. He was selected to go to do an exchange program in Granada in Spain. So my parents were always very supportive. You know, we didn't really have much of money because, you know, like in 2008, 2009, there was this bad economic crisis. And, you know, in Colombia, it also hit us really bad. We didn't really have much. But then our parents were always very supportive, and they were always there to say, you know, if you want to do something, just do it. We're not really going to hold you back. And you know, I was 16 back then when I went to Norway for the first time. So my mom, of course, was a little bit sad, but my mom was always there to encourage me, and my father as well, to say, you know, if you need to do this, you got to do it, and then you just go off. You go, you have your own wings, and you take off. And so they were always very supportive, and I'm very, very glad and very blessed, I will say, for having parents like that. You know, I know that many other families will try to keep their children just there together, and they do more harm than they do good when they do this kind of thing. So, yeah, I feel very, very happy that my parents were very liberal in that sense.
It's incredible. What a high-achieving brothers and sisters you have. I mean, you are incredibly high achievers. It's amazing. I love this story. We're going to take a short break, but this is Columbia Calling, episode 201, and we're talking to Ervin Liz, who's in Iowa at the moment. And when we come back, we'll be connecting with Iowa and Minneapolis, and continuing the talk about the Colombian coffee connection, this incredible story that comes out of Tierra Adentro, out of Cauca, and is bringing great coffee to, do you call it the Midwest or the Northwest? Well, what is this area of, what do we, it's north of the Midwest.
Yeah, so the Midwest, we are off Minneapolis, and we're serving the entire country. So regardless of where you are, if you're in the Midwest, it's called the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Go to ColumbiaCoffeeConnection.com and you will be able to our story and also coffee. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll take a short break right now, and we'll be back to continue this fascinating conversation with Ervin, Tara, and John Backlund as well. So don't go away, and we'll be right back. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, episode 201. I'm in Bogota, but my interviewees, the who are accompanying me here for this episode, episode 201, Ervin Liz, who's in Iowa at the moment, and now we're going to bring in John and Tara Backlund, who are in Minneapolis, if I'm not mistaken, and they are the co-founders of the company, the founders of the Columbia Coffee Connection. How do you want to say welcome on Columbia Calling?
Thanks for inviting us on.
You're most welcome.
We are actually, I'm the owner of the Columbia Coffee Connection. Ervin, I call the founder because it was his idea. And obviously as a non-resident in the United States, he can't legally own a business here. So he technically is working for me, and he's the head of our marketing, as you can tell in the big show. I can't get him to stop saying ColumbiaCoffeeConnection.com, but that's always a good thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, his enthusiasm is infectious, I have to say. And so he approached you after you'd given like a talk at university. Is that how this came about?
Yeah, I speak at multiple colleges. I get calls, you know, to go talk to entrepreneurial courses. I've been an entrepreneur in the U.S. here since I was about 18 years old, and I've had several businesses. And like Ervin was saying, with experience, you have successes and failures. And so, you know, with those successes and the failures, I like to give back to the young people who are coming up, because everybody thinks you go to college and you get a job. And you know, having more business owners makes the economy better, makes people make better decisions. You know, people are fighting for what's right instead of just fighting for things for themselves. And so I like to go out there and promote business ownership.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic. And what did you think then when this guy approached you, you know, this guy, you had no idea who he was, and said, and he, I guess he talked and talked and talked and convinced you.
He was one of the more vocal ones in the entrepreneurial course, and we stayed in touch for about 3 years. Nice. You know, he was, when he left college, he had Facebooked me and said, I left college and I'm doing this and this. And I said, all right, man, you know, go after it. You know, whatever you're going to do, put 100% into it and don't stop. Don't look back. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. And then I got another message from him 6 months later, 9 months later. He said, I'm back in college and I'm going to finish. and I said, well, that's great, man. You know, keep going, put 100% in, don't look back, you know, just get it done. Excellent. And then within about a year of going back to college, I was back down there talking, and he contacted me and said, I want to propose an idea to you. And he, like he said, he was on the phone, he was real nervous. I could hear him kind of stammering a little bit. And I just said, well, spit it out, man. Come on. We're friends. Talk about it. And he said, I want to start a coffee import business and I'd like to be a partner with you. And I said, well, what's your plan? You know, do you have a business plan? Do you have it all laid out? And he started firing me Google Drive documents and spreadsheets and Word documents and all this stuff. And I'm going through it. And I called him back and I said, absolutely, let's do it.
Amazing.
You know, and he's had a smile on his face ever since. And so have I.
I believe it. And what, I mean, did you have any knowledge of coffee aside from drinking it beforehand?
No, just a casual coffee drinker. I enjoy coffee. I never understood the economics of coffee. I never understood the business of coffee. But as I teach in the classes, business is business. And it doesn't matter what business you're in. There's economics and there's values and there's marketing and there's people. And, you know, and if you can deal with all those things, you can be a business owner and you can have a good business. So,
Definitely.
So I learned a lot.
And then recently, you and Tara came down to Colombia.
Yes.
How was that? And tell us about that.
This is where I'm going to let Taylor step in a little bit and talk about our adventures. As you know, being in Bogota, that's a pretty modern city. But if you go to Tiradentro and Cauca, you're going to go up the mountains. You're going to drive on roads that don't exist and that are falling apart constantly and washing out and bridges are breaking. And then you get up into the mountains, into the region where the NASA people live. And you realize you're driving on horse paths.
Yeah.
And they call it a road, but it's not really a road. Mm-mm. And you make your way. Let's put it that way. So here's my lovely wife, Tara, to explain a few things about Colombia.
Well, you're going to have to get a whistle stop rendition of this as well. Because there's so much to share. And we were only there a week. But when I tell people about it, I say it wasn't a vacation, it wasn't a trip, it was an adventure. Uh-huh. And it was absolutely incredible. It's we were actually just coming off of a move. So we moved house. We had one day to pack up again, and we hopped on a trip to Colombia. And it was nonstop adventure from the airport. First of all, they said that we didn't purchase our ticket, running to catch airplanes, and then we finally made it to Colombia. But like John said, just an amazing adventure that I'm glad I didn't have any insight of what it was going to be about, because it was kind of one of those quintessential stories where you take this amazing adventure to get, and you go through these trials and tribulations, but you have this experience that you can't imagine, that it makes it so much better because you've made that journey. And one other thing that I say to people after this trip is there are a lot of people, especially here in the US, that will say, you know, I can't live without my coffee. But going up there and meeting the farmers and seeing how they farm and live literally on cliffs, they're farming the coffee, that is their life. Like, they can't live without the coffee. And it's such an interesting perspective shift. And it humbled me in so many ways.
We were joking as we were walking out to Celia's house. And Irvin, you know about our humanitarian effort down there. And we built a house. Irvin started a GoFundMe campaign before we went down there. And when we got down there, there was a grandma whose house was falling apart and her roof was falling apart. And she was literally sleeping on a mud floor and it was raining on her. And by the time we got there, the house had been built, the roof had been built, and she had multiple rooms, a bed off the floor, and she welcomed us into her home. And me and Tara were joking about, you know, first world problems as we were walking up to this house, you know, and all the things that we complain about and don't realize that we have.
Yeah.
And our humanitarian effort is a major part of what we're doing down there. We literally found our extended family. We came into the NASA region and met the people and stayed in their homes and lived like they do. And I could do it for the rest of my life. It was awesome. Like, great people. You know, I even got fire ants. I had everything that could happen to me happen to me.
Get the millipede.
A millipede.
I pulled our sheet back and there was a millipede in our bed. I grabbed it and brought it out and talked to Irvin's dad. And I said, is this thing poisonous? And his mom was like, kill it.
They're quite venomous, aren't they?
I think they are. It was about yay long, about 6 inches long.
I called it the quadrilipede.
The quadrilipede. Well, this is part of the adventure. These are things that you'll never, ever forget. And of course, you're sounding now that, you've given us the impression that you were so well received when you went down to Tierra Adentro. Yep. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? And so this humanitarian side of things, this is your project, Coffee with a Heart?
Yeah, that's what we say. You've seen our logo.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So we have the dark brown, which is Irvin. We have the light tan, which is me. And together we create the heart of the coffee bean. Uh-huh. And we're giving back 10% of all proceeds, not just profits.
Mm-hmm.
And we give that back to our humanitarian effort to the farming community.
That's incredible.
And, you know, we're excited to continue to build that, you know, because we want to give back hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
and help the community and do things that really matter, you know, not some of these projects that you see that somebody has a great idea, but things that the community wants and needs.
Right. And so you've rebuilt this grandmother's house. What's the next project that you've got lined up?
Yeah. So, for that, we are mainly focused on helping indigenous elders.
Yeah.
So right now, we need to still complete the house. It was built, but it's not completed. There are certain things that need to be done, such as the floor. Mm. So that will be the thing that we're going to be working next on. And then as for the projects, how we're going to be handling is, we have people down there who are looking at different situations that might be going on.
Mm.
We don't want to have just somebody, you know, saying, hey, can we do this or can we do that? Because you understand that when money is involved, you know, people try to get their own, maybe try to put their own interest into the kind of project. So we want to have a view that is neutral, somebody who is neutral, who doesn't have an interest specifically. But essentially, the focus is on indigenous elders. Mm-hmm. So I know that there is other people who also need help. So things such as, you know, helping with food or just rebuilding houses, helping with health insurance or mm-hmm. things that are related on this end, but mainly focused just on indigenous elders. And that is where the real impact, I think, is going to go, because in many situations, such as in the case of Celia, you know, she doesn't really have anyone to help her, mm-hmm. And that's like the worst part, you know. There are some people who at least have family, but she doesn't have anyone. And so, you know, in this case, who can help her, if not us, you know, not many people can help her. And so if we can be there for these kind of people, that is the things that we want to do. And I use the will, because right now, you know, we, of course, we're working on everything that we're trying to do, but we also need the money. And so that money is essentially going to come also through the sales, right? Mm. And so we'll be focusing, or we will be working and developing more the Coffee with Heart humanitarian initiative as we grow as a company, as we make more sales, of course. So, yeah.
It's incredible. Now, going back to the journey down to Cauca, I'm sure you've got some pretty incredible tales that you can tell us about some more extreme things that you wouldn't have experienced maybe in the U.S., John, Tara.
I'll tell you what, Richard, our driver, we had a driver and we had a car, and our driver was so scared to drive on the roads, I had to drive, and he lives there. So I drove, and, you know, I have a history of racing, you know, motorcycles and snowmobiles and that kind of stuff here in the States. And so I was very comfortable driving. I didn't see too many problems other than hopefully our car could make it up certain muddy hills and different things like that. But, yeah, we took video and pictures, and we stopped off at the roadside cafes, and we patronized, you know, the people there and left good tips and, you know, made people really happy on those days that we were there. We drank out of the springs from the stream, the waterfalls coming out of the mountain. Had that type of experience. Tara and I slept in beds that my feet hung over the edge if I stretched out.
Cold showers.
Oh, cold showers were a big thing down there. But I'll tell you what, everybody where we stayed, they gave us their best. They gave us their room. They cooked us the meals that they thought were the best. They brought us to places that we needed to go. They made sure we were on time. They wanted to know about us. I mean, it was an incredible experience and incredible people. And here in the States, Columbia gets a pretty bad rap, and Hollywood makes a lot of money off of talking about drug lords and drug deals and all that kind of stuff. And I'm happy to be part of helping people see Columbia for what it is. They're hardworking people, they're industrious, and they just want to be paid for their work a fair price. Those are the farmers that we talked to and that we met with. When we first met with our first farmers, they wouldn't even look at me because they've been taken advantage of so much in the coffee trade, not only by white people, but also by their own countrymen. And they were saying, why should we trust you? And we paid for our first shipment of coffee sight unseen, and we paid 1.5 times what they're already getting. And we said, this is how you can trust us, because we'll pay for the coffee before you even deliver it, but we expect your best. And that's all they wanted. And by the end of our meetings, they all wanted to take pictures with Tara and I. And I'll tell you what, they didn't want anything to do with us when they first saw us. So when we went out and we were walking through the fields, like I said, I had got some fire ants on my legs. And I got bit by only 3 fire ants. And I can see how these things can kill people, because it paralyzed my whole left side up to my arm. And there was so much pain. But I'll tell you what, over the next few days, my immune system bounced back like crazy. I felt so good. I felt so rejuvenated and revived. And then Irvin said, oh yeah, they encourage us to do that as kids because it makes your immune system get boosted. And so I said, well, maybe we'll start fire ant clinic here in America.
The fire ant club.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. No, and I heard, I mean, that's amazing. I heard a rumor about a snake in a pot.
So let me give you a little history here. Not only is Irvin indigenous Nasa, but he is the grandson of the most famous shaman of the Nasa. And I also study under shamans here in the United States. And so when I found this out about Irvin, I knew that there was some divine intervention going on here, that we were put together to be able to learn from each other. And so Irvin learned a lot of things from his grandfather and learned a bunch of the history, and we won't go into it now. That's for another podcast.
Sure.
But when Irvin and his brother were young, they were out digging in one of the hills, and I'll let him tell you the rest of the story.
Okay.
Right. So my brother and I, we were digging in the hill. This was actually when the road just had come to the region. The ground is being shaken, and so it's very soft to dig around. Actually, to tell that story, I need to tell a previous story, another story. So, the house where my father's house is at, there is a path, and this path, according to the elders, is a path that has been there since the time of the Spaniards, when they came, to America and all that stuff. And so what they say is that this path, the queen of the Nasa, the Gaitana, mm-hmm. She's not the exact queen of the Nasa, but we recognize her as an important leader in the region. She was trying to get away from the Spaniards, because back then we used to live down in the valley. We in the ancient times, we didn't actually live in the mountains. So the Spaniards were coming down from the valley, and they were trying to get the gold of the people. And so what they did is they walked this path, and they were fighting, right? They were fighting, and then the ones in the back were fighting. People were getting killed, and so they were burying them on the side. And so we know this is true, because along this path, there have been many findings of different pottery. There has been lots of like burial sites and all that stuff. Apparently, some people have found gold and things like that. And so, anyways, when the road came to my house, just on the back of the house, there was an area where they found some pottery. And so with my brother, we went to see if we could find more. And so we were digging around. The soil was, again, the ground was, again, pretty soft. So we were digging, and we found a pot that was sealed. So when we were digging, we broke the pot, right? We broke it. The pot got opened, and when it got opened, a snake came out of there. And so we were wondering, so like, how did this snake got in there? And so we thought that there might have been an opening into the pot where the snake got inside. What we did is we took the pot, put it together, and we realized that there was no hole. But I know that the snake came out of the pot because it was fairly deep. It wasn't shallow. It was fairly deep, and my brother also saw it. So we both saw it coming out of the pot as we broke it, right? And so again, there was no opening, and the snake just somehow disappeared. It disappeared. I'm trying to remember how it disappeared. All I know is that we saw the snake. It jumped out. We tried to kill it, and then it just kind of disappeared and it went away magically. So then later that day, I went and we went to my mom and our mom, and then we asked what did she thought about that. And so what she said is that the NASA, when they were doing these burials, they put a spell of some kind into the gold, and so that when they were burying the gold, if this gold was not meant to be for you, then the gold will become alive and disappear from your sight. And so I do not know how true this is. I don't know what exactly happened. I cannot explain it. All that I know, that I'm 100% certain, is that snake came out of that pot, and that pot had no openings. And it's not only me, it's also my brother. And so, again, I cannot explain it. People can choose to believe it or not believe it, but that's what happened.
Yeah, fascinating. So the snake could have been gold, but the curse might have turned it into a snake so that it's amazing.
Yeah, so it got away from us. And yeah, that's exactly what happened. And again, no explanation.
This is a good thing, because had you found the gold, it might have changed your pathway in life. You might have been a different Irvind than today.
Perhaps. I definitely think that everything happens for a reason. Oh, yeah. You know. Oh, yeah. So I suppose so. I guess that's the way that it needed to be, and that's why maybe I am here. Otherwise, I would not be here. I don't know.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Now, going back a little bit to the Colombian coffee connection, and so you guys are importing this high quality coffee from Cauca, Colombia. And where can people in the U.S. get hold of your coffee?
They can go to our website, ColombianCoffeeConnection.com. Mm-hmm. That's the best place. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
All right.
But Richard, why don't you speak a little bit about the quality of coffee in Colombia?
Well, I thank you for turning the tables on me. The quality of coffee in Colombia for a very long time has been poor, let's say. I mean, Colombian coffee is very good, but what we have been able to get our hands on here has been the second-rate stuff, whereas the best stuff has always gone to it for exportation. But fortunately, in the last few years, you know, an actual sort of coffee culture has come into being, and there really are some great small producers making top quality stuff. You do pay more for it, and rightly so. You know, rightly so than the mass-produced stuff that then is sold. I mean, I cannot, for example, stop on a highway and have a coffee that's just come out of a thermos that's been there for 3 days and it's been sweetened with panela. It's like a hot Coca-Cola. But now we finally have good coffee. But it's strange for people to hear that. It's like, well, you know, Colombia is the land of coffee, but all the good stuff left these shores.
Yeah. So would you think that the coffee coming from the NASA people grown at altitude processed the way you've heard? Would that be an exciting coffee for you to have?
Definitely. And of course, knowing about the roasting process and seeing how it's been done, or, you know, what if it's medium roast or dark roast and stuff, I think that there are definite buyers in Bogota. There are specialty stores who will stock expensive coffees, and because there are people who are looking to pay the right price for quality product, and I think that's the big difference. Not like I don't want to mention all of the chains and everything else that down here, but there are people, and it doesn't take a lot. You know, it doesn't take a lot to change one family's life or two families' life or one small community. It doesn't take a lot. It's like you were saying, it's paying the right price and being respectful of this this amazing crop.
So what we're doing is we're getting the coffee to our warehouse in Minneapolis in 3 weeks after harvest.
Wow.
So not only are we bringing some of the best coffee in the world up here, but it's also the freshest.
Yeah, definitely. So, and will you be stocking in some of the coffee shops up there in Minneapolis?
You know, we're doing online sales only right now, and we will sell green beans to people that want to roast their own. Mm. But it's micro batches right now. It's direct ship right from the farmer. And the farmers are doing the processing up to the drying, and then we take over for the roasting. And we're just trying to get out the best product, and we're not trying to mass produce it right now.
Yeah.
Irvin is being inundated with people that want to sell their coffee to him, but we're starting with the NASA people, and we're doing it properly from the beginning.
Yeah, it's
not just about making money for us. It's about our cause too.
It's about these people who went and saw, and you know that where the money's going and where the coffee's coming from. I can understand that. I can fully understand that.
Back down there at the end of November, so we'll make sure we come and visit you.
Yeah, just drop me a line and we'll have a coffee. So let me just take this moment and say thank you so much, all of you, for being on the podcast, on the Colombia Calling podcast. It's been really fun to talk about this, a bit more about the NASA culture, which I know most of my listeners will really know nothing about. And of course, to have, you know, entrepreneurs such as yourselves on the show and really showing you that it is possible to do these things. Colombia is a complicated country, but things can be done and positive stories can be told. And I mean, just look at, just reflect on what Irvin has told us about not only his route in life, but those of his brothers and sisters, and taking John and Tara down to his home. I mean, it's pretty incredible stuff. This is a heartwarming story. So Irvin, thank you for getting in touch with me, and John and Tara, thank you for agreeing to talk. I don't need to thank Irvin for talking, because he's awesome at it. But it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope that maybe in November that we can get together, and of course in the future when you or your coffee, the Colombia and Coffee Connection, ColombiaCoffeeCollection.com, is a roaring success, we can get you back on the podcast talking about it.
Thank you very much, Richard.
You're most welcome. Yeah, you're most welcome. And of course, like I said, let me know when you're in town, and we'll get together. This has been episode 201 of Colombia Calling. It's been a very special episode, a really good episode. I've enjoyed it. I know that my listeners have enjoyed it too. So once again, thank you to Irvin, John, and Tara. That's us signing off for today. And we'll be back next week with another interesting interviewee here on the podcast. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.